You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Good evening and welcome to the latest edition of the SFF podcast. What a team we've got lined up tonight. It's myself, Dave. We've got the Eva Murray back. Eva, how are we this fine Wednesday evening?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks so much for having me back, Dave. I'm looking forward to chatting about the upcoming matches and what's happened to the SWPL. So.
Okay, the viewers that are listening will not see that Eva's currently got a Scotland strip on, so that just goes to show that how she's Scottish alongside the accent. We're not alone, and we're not alone in terms of Scottish terms either. We are joined by Laura Howard from Vavil. Laura, how are we this fine Wednesday evening?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on. Feel honoured.
Excellent. Yes, absolutely. So, first and foremost, Eva, we'll start with Amy Gallagher because it was one of those that we were waiting for it to happen, but when it eventually happened, we were all very excited to see her in the squad.
Yeah, no, it's super exciting to see Amy Gallagher finally make that, get our first call-up, you know, SWPL Player of the Match in August there, already racked up a number of goals this season for Celtic. I think she's known as a versatile player who can really show up in some of the crucial moments. She's shown that for Celtic. And, I think it's really exciting. I think especially as we've seen, Eden Cuthbert's not been called up through to injury, I think this could be a real opportunity for Amy to have a shot and see what she can do. But she's a super exciting player and I'm really excited to see that she's been called up.
Laura, from the outside looking in, from you being English, I suppose, you must be delighted that there's no Eden Cuthbert from an England perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you look at the Scotland team and she's definitely one of the biggest threats there. Obviously a big name player and maybe they can, like, but she's definitely going to be one of the bigger threats, and to see her out is a blessing. But obviously we've got Ciara Walsh and Beth England out, so arguably we've also got some problems of our own.
Apologies. For this game in question, I mean, you've obviously got a range of options, Laura, as you kind of alluded to there, but the fact you don't have the players you mentioned, is that going to be a bore for you, or are you kind of, do you have that strength and depth anyway that you're going to be like, okay, let's face it on, let's try and get 3 points against our arch rivals?
I think we have the strength and depth. I think the biggest concern, I don't think Beth England's a massive concern as good of a player as she is, just because you've got the quality of like Alessia Russo, Rachel Daly, and she didn't particularly start a lot of the World Cup, Beth England. Ciara Walsh is definitely like the biggest miss from that squad. I think that will raise a few questions. But I think if you look at the World Cup performance, we missed her in the China game and we did exceptionally well in that match. Obviously, Scotland is a completely different prospect and will probably be a tougher game. So whether we miss that quality, but I don't think she had a particularly amazing World Cup for the quality of player that she is. And I think we've got capable replacements and like the likes of Katie Zellum. So I do think we've still got a good chance.
Thank you, Laura. And we also spoke to Fran Alonso, the Celtic women's manager, who expressed his delight at Amy Gallagher getting called up to the Scotland squad.
Yeah, of course. I think every team that I've played for, like, I've made a step up every time. And I think I've not regretted any decision I've made. And I'm just really happy that everything's commitment and stuff's paid off and I'm finally in the Scotland squad, yeah.
Do you think the way Fran plays has helped?
Yeah, of course. I think I've improved a lot, especially last year under him, style of play, and he's improved me a lot as a player, so I've got a lot to thank him for, yeah.
Scotland has a club identity, club football identity, international, of course. Do you get that feeling, even though you've not been in yet?
Yeah, of course. Watching from afar, you know, it looks like a good squad to be in. Obviously, playing in SWPL, there's a lot of SW players already playing in the squad, so I'm just looking forward to playing with him.
Has Alexa Kelly Clark and that said anything about being in the squad? Or?
Yeah, she's just told me to be myself and just train as a train every week. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm nervous, obviously, but looking forward to playing well.
Yeah. Did Pedro have any conversations with you?
Yeah, he's given me a phone call and just basically said there's no pressure on myself, just to go and show what you can do.
Yeah, because he's that type of guy. You'll probably suit the way you play because he's possession-based.
Yeah, of course. I think I like, obviously being Spanish, I don't know if it's a Spanish thing, but I like the way they play football. So, hopefully I can show what I can do throughout the week.
Do you feel you have a part to play, or, as Pedro says, there's no pressure for you?
No, I'm not. I'm just looking to learn and grow as much as I can throughout the week. I'm not expecting anything. It's just, first of all, getting the call up is a main thing for me.
For yourself, it's probably about, like, club football. You've made that steady incline. It'll be exactly the same probably for Scotland as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's my first call up. I think just thinking of, like, the training, I'll be so much harder than I'm used to. So I think just one step at a time, first of all, call up, and I'm just looking to focus on the training and training well.
Was that an expectation to get to Scotland squad, or was your priority Celtic?
No, I think my priority is always Celtic. I think Scotland squad is stuff for other people to talk about. I think I've just been focusing on performing well here, and thankfully I've paid off and I've been called up. Sorry.
Because that was the idea amongst many pundits, fans, media, like, you should have been in the squad, but maybe didn't get that opportunity.
Yeah, I think if you're performing well, and, like, Celtic fans, obviously, social media pundits and stuff are always going to talk about it, but I think I've kind of just tried to block that out and just focus on myself.
We also spoke to Fran Alonso, the Celtic women's manager, who expressed his delight at Amy Gallagher getting called up to the Scotland squad.
Amy Gallagher at the Scotland squad, you must be proud of her.
Yeah, Amy, I think she could probably got the call earlier than that. She was in the preliminary list a few times, and at the end she didn't make the squad. That, you know, for me was, you know, she deserved it before, but it doesn't matter. The important thing is she's going to be there, she's going to experience that, and it's totally well deserved. Right now, obviously, the top goal scorer, I don't know about the other teams score today, but before today she was the top goal scorer with 9 goals, and you know, she's been outstanding on and off the ball, and not only scoring goals but creating chances to the ACSs as well. So yeah, totally deserved, and I hope she plays, and I hope she does very, very well for Scotland. If she plays, I know she's going to make a massive impact for her country.
Caught up with Amy Gallagher and Fran Alonso. Here's what they had to say. Okay, thanks very much for listening to that interview. Much appreciated. Now, when you're looking ahead to this game, Eva, how do you approach it from a Scotland perspective?
I think it's about, you know, taking the chances when we get them. I think Scotland have shown that when we get those chances, that when we do take them, even against, you know, top opponents, people who, you know, on paper we might, you know, not beat. But also it's just not parking the bus from the outset. I think we do have still quite a strong squad who can get the ball up the field and potentially get a few goals in. I think especially when we've got, I know we've said there about Erin Cuthbert not being injured, but you know, we've got, you know, Corsi's back, Grimshaw's back, so I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't be, you know, heads down from the get-go. I think we should be, you know, not parking the bus and just taking the chances we get them, and knowing that England are a threat, but there's no reason why we can't take our chances when we get them, when there's that connection in the Scotland team, we can show that we can really take the challenge to some of these bigger teams and nations who have done incredibly well in recent years.
Yeah, I'm speaking to my SFF colleague John. Eva, we were saying it's a very strong squad despite the fact that we've got some big players out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we'll maybe discuss it later, but especially some of the youngsters who are coming into the Scotland team, people like Emma Watson, obviously just signed for Man United, had a solid season at Rangers, our first senior debut for Scotland, scored 2 goals. Has scored against Finland, I think, as well there. And, you know, people like Kirsten McLean as well. So, yeah, I think these are, to other teams, might not be known quantities, so they might underestimate them. But I think Scotland have a really good balance between the, for lack of a better term, the veterans in the squad and the newbies coming out. So, yeah, there's no reason why we can't take the challenge to England, I don't think. But, yeah.
Is this the start of a new chapter, just in the aspect we do have more youngsters?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think what's shown as well is if you look at who's been called up to the under 23 squad, it's people who we've seen or you know, people we've seen recently in the senior call up. So I think that does show the strength of our you know, our youngsters who are coming up, you know, people like Abby Harrison, Jenna Clark, who are obviously in the under 23 set up just now. But yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's an almost a changing of the guard. We've seen recently big retirements in the international side of things from people like Jen Beattie. I think it's exciting for the Scotland team. Because, like I say, I think we've got that. We're in a place where we've not been for a long time, where we do have that balance of newbies up and coming who have been through the system, but also the solid kind of grounding of the veterans like your Rachel Corsi's, your Nicola Doherty's.
By the way, just before I continue here, Eva, I interviewed Amy Galker on Sunday, as you obviously know, and she's so grounded.
Yeah.
She gives nothing away. She gives nothing away.
No, I love that. And I think she's we talked about her earlier, but she's someone coming in who has that. She's almost the middle ground. She's still, in my eyes, one of the kind of newbies and youngsters. But absolutely, yeah, she's got that grounding, and it could be part of that foundation and then the base for almost being that support for the actual youngsters, you know, the 17, 18-year-olds too. No, I get that.
Is Jenna Quack injured? Do you know one or Eva? Is she injured or?
I think she's in the under-23s. I think she's been called up for the under-23s.
Okay.
Yeah. Abby Harrison, though, has just pulled out of the under-23 setup, so I don't know if she's injured.
Because I know she hasn't spoken to John myself personally. We were a bit surprised how she was not involved in the full squad.
Yeah, no, I was, so was I, especially with obviously just signing for Liverpool and things. Jenna Clark was solid for Glasgow City last season, and a few appearances that she's had for Scotland in recent months have been, again, solid performances, so I was quite surprised, and it was just when I was doing a bit of research for this that I realised that she'd been called up for the under-23s, but hopefully that means that she will get some game time at the international level there.
Because I'd argue from Jenna Clark's perspective, if you take probably Hayley Wilder, Warren Davidson, and the South African,
Motohalo.
If you take them all out of the equation, I'd argue Jenna Clark was up there in terms of influential, valuable players that Glasgow City had at their disposal last season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think especially when you see Glasgow City take on the, you know, Rangers and Celtic last season, Jenna Clark always showed up. She was always a force against them and helped them help Glasgow City get the results that were really needed to clinch that clinch the league last season.
Warner, from the outside looking in, three players from your perspective who you look at and say they're good players for Scotland.
Put me on the spot now. I think you mentioned Rachel Corsi. I think the experience that she brings to the squad is really integral. As much as like all these youngsters that are coming in are going to help the squad, I think having that reassuring kind of mature player is someone that's going to be really important. And especially because she plays WSL football, so she'll measure up well probably against a lot of the England squad that do play there. I'm genuinely my Scottish football knowledge is very, very limited, sadly, and I do need to read up more. I think if I was naming players, I'd just be picking big names from the WSL, and I don't think that's necessarily where the talent and the threat is going to come from in that Scottish team. But I do think, you know, I'm going to stick with just the one of Rachel Corsi is going to be really, really integral in terms of in that. Just the knowledge of the opposition, and I think having that knowledge is going to be a key kind of asset within that squad in terms of facing up against the English team, especially an England team that's relatively tied. I think there can be good. I'm scared and wary of this Scottish team because I think they have really good potential, and I think in the state that England are in at the moment, in terms of off the back of a summer of a World Cup, not had much time to recover, I think this is a time when Scotland could definitely make a dent for sure.
Yes, absolutely. More of Rachel Corsi to come later on the show for a very important aspect of this preparation and the preparation leading up to Friday that's been very much documented in the press. So I'll put these both in the spot here, but both for obviously preferential reasons. Warren, I'm going to start with yourself, your England team for Friday.
This is a tough one because I was debating even what formation Serena Beegan might even go for, because obviously we saw a move to the back five during the World Cup for England, and having previously always kind of played a back four. So I think easy one to start off with is probably going to be Mary Earps in goal. And then, yeah, for my defence, I think I decided that it would be See, I'm really torn because I was going to go back to a back four based on the defenders she's chosen. But you've got Kira Walsh out, and when Kira Walsh was out last time, we went to a back five. So if I go with the back five, the strange thing is that Rachel Daly has still been listed as a forward, despite having played left wing back all World Cup. So if she's planning on playing Rachel Daly forward because Beth England's out, then I think she plays a back four, and I think that will be Lucy Bronze, Millie Bright, Alex Greenwood and Jess Carter to start. And then I think you've got Katie Sellum and Georgia Stanway in the kind of two, a three of take your pick between Ella Toon and Lauren James at number 10. And then I think you've got Lauren Hemp and maybe Chloe Kelly or potentially Lauren James on that right wing. And then I'd say start Rachel Daly up front because I know Alessia Russo is joining the group late. So that's how I think England will line up. I'm going to go plump with the back four.
From a Scotland perspective, Eva, well, the midfield area is where it's very intense for me. It's very, oh, who are you going to put in where? But Gibson is a no-brainer.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
McLaughlin, I'm unsure of it because I don't know if you heard, but she came off after 12 minutes on Sunday against Montrose.
Yeah, that was kind of my lineup as well, because I originally had put Rachel McLaughlin, and then I remembered about the, and we've not heard any update really as far as I can see from what that injury, but I know you were at the match, weren't you, Dave? So you probably got more information about it than I do. But I would put Fiona Brown there instead of McLaughlin to start anyway, unless we get more information on that injury.
Well, when you look at the Finland game, of course they didn't play that game.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that Doherty will go left back. And they'll probably put Corsair with Howard, or they'll put Corsair with McCandy.
McCandy, yep. I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet there.
Now, the big one, who do you put in the two? Because Sam Kerr, I think, could be at a decent shout, but the other defensive midfielder, probably. You've got some good options there, but you're also scratching your head and going, who do you put in Cuthbert's position?
Yeah.
I think it's too soon for Amy Gallagher.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, and I was just thinking back to the Australia match, and we had the 4-3-3, and it was Weir, Kerr, and Watson. Now again, I'm a huge Emma Watson fan. I think she's solid, but again, a much higher pressure match against England, and again, it's the same kind of situation with Gallagher. Is that where we play them, or do we go for one of the more experienced players?
We all know how Pedro likes to play a 4-2-3-1 or a possession based formation, which I would be surprised if he made all good plays, but exactly the same time, I think it's too soon for him.
I think especially from the get go, I think we hopefully we'll see her get some time even during the England match. But I think starting 11 from the get go is maybe a bit too soon.
Yeah, so we'll go for Kerr. We'll go for... Who are we going to go for? Sorry.
I don't know.
Good question.
Who were you thinking? Jamie Lee Napier? Was that your other option?
It was her or Martha Thomas.
Okay. I'd go Martha Thomas then. If we're going with the more experience, let's do Martha Thomas.
I think Claire Emsley starts for me on Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. Emsley's up there. I think, again, as one of those players who's got the experience, is obviously doing things in the NWSL. I think she's one of our more high-profile players, and absolutely Claire Emsley is there.
I wouldn't start Emma Watson. I would start her on the bench to have loads of energy when coming on. So I would have Hanson, Weir... who was it? Sorry. Hanson, Weir...
Emsley.
Emsley, correct. Thank you. And then Lauren Davidson up front.
Yeah, no, I think that's a solid pick. I was a bit all over the place with Watson as well. I'm a huge Emma Watson fan. I think she's shown her worth in recent matches. But again, England are another opponent. Finland or Northern Ireland or Costa Rica is what she's played in recently. But I think that's a solid starting 11. I think we've created there. See if Pedro's listening.
I think McQueen can be a good option off the bench as well.
Yeah, I think we've got quite a good few super subs there potentially. But I worry as England also have a pile of super subs who could come on and change the game.
I know the focus of this podcast is on Friday either, but see for Tuesday, are you looking at that and saying, let's get youngsters on if we can?
Yeah, I think we spoke about it in the last kind of podcast that I was on, and about Belgium being our best chance to get hopefully a good result and get the goals in there. But I think it's also a case of not underestimating Belgium too. But I think out of the three opponents that we have in the Nations League, I think Belgium's a clear option to try and get playing time for some of our youngsters and some of those who are just making their way into the senior team. Absolutely. But yeah, I don't think we can ever underestimate Belgium, because I think they'll be thinking about that too with Scotland.
Yeah. Warner, do you remember Joe Potter?
Yeah, a little bit.
Was he a good player?
Is this a trick question?
No, not at all, not at all.
Okay. I don't know if my interest in women's football has come in waves, so I followed it as when I was about 10, 11, and then kind of grew out over to the men's game and now back into the women's game. But I can't say I'd give a nuanced answer on that one. I don't want to make myself look stupid.
Okay, because you've just led us on handsomely. Women's manager Joe Potter and ex-England stalwart. This will be a game of intrigue for Joe Potter. Here is how she looked forward to the game coming up on Friday.
It's a tough one for me because, you know, I really want my players to go and do well, but yeah, I'm an England girl, and you know, with the experience I've got in that squad and with that national setup, it's, you can't pull away from that ever, and I'm not sure anyone would expect me to, but I want my girls to do well and play really well on the night.
Yeah, for your girls, it's an opportunity to test themselves against all World Cup finalists.
Absolutely, and I think that's something that the players have got to go and thrive under. I think it's you look at England and they're learning, well, they know how to win now. They've already learned how to win. They've become serial winners. So, you know, they go into the game expecting to win. And I think that's a different pressure for Scotland and the players that they've got there. But, you know, I think as long as Scotland keep closing that gap between them and England and not letting England drive away too much with that, I think that they're doing a great job. And going and testing themselves against World Cup finalists on Friday night will be a huge test for them.
England's mentality will be huge, especially after what happened.
Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing for England that I've seen over the past couple of years, is that mentality shift.
Scotland targeted a win in Sunderland on Friday evening. We caught up with Nicola Docherty, who was in a very positive and confident mood prior to the match.
We're getting there as a team, and we know it's going to be a tough match on Friday, but look, it's one that we're going to be raring to go. It's a Scotland-England game, so anything can happen.
What's the mindset from Pedro ahead of the game for the Nations League?
Yeah, it's to go and win the game. I think if you're a Scotland player, you're any professional footballer, you want to win matches, so we'll be looking to go into that game to get something out of it, and especially a win.
Because the confidence is high under Pedro just now, so you will get to keep that going.
Yeah, like I said, we've been playing well under Pedro and we're really enjoying our football. It's possessional football and look, everyone's playing really well at the moment. We're getting some big results for the national team, but we're going to be going into that game with full confidence.
Try another long range screamer on Friday.
I mean, I really, to be honest, I don't care who scores. If anybody scores, I don't really care. But look, I got that one against Australia. That was nice. But as long as we win the game, that's all that matters.
We've got to obviously speak about a hallelujah moment here, because an SFA dispute has been rectified. And what's your overall ride and emotion on it? Because as far as I'm concerned, and I'm speaking to John about this, the fact that this had started in the Ireland game means that there's something far superior than what has been perceived and put out there in the open. Because let's be honest, that was a massive game, and for all the events to come out in the aftermath of that, suggests that there was something that the players were obviously frustrated with the SFA about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think with any kind of industrial action or action taken like this, it's taken as a last resort. And the players felt that they had no other option but to go down the route that they did. And yeah, I think you're right. I don't think we'll ever have the full story of what went on or what happened. But the fact that you know, our national team felt that they had to take action against the SFA says a lot. And it's something we've seen happen in, you know, in other countries and other nations where there's been this, you know, push for equal, you know, equal responsibilities or equal, it's not just pay. I was going to say equal pay, but I think especially, and I think when we have ever heard Rachel Corsi talk about the situation, she's been very clear that it's not just about equal pay. It was about conditions. It was about, you know, access to recovery and the kind of and access to facilities and even just travel and things like that as well. But I think it seems to have come to an end this week. And what I'd say on it is, like, you know, I trust the players. I think if Rachel Corsi and their team are saying that they are, you know, they're happy or they're content with what they've been promised or what's coming down the line, then absolutely I trust them. But I think it's totally commendable for the team to have done what they did, to stand up for equality and stand up for better conditions. And it's not just for them, and Rachel Corsi has always been clear on that, it's not just for them, it's for, you know, the young women coming down the line as well. It's incredibly commendable, and I think the fact that it took to the last minute for this decision to be made, for it to be pulled, for the action to be pulled, I think it was the day of the tribunal hearing, says a lot. But no, like I say, we don't know the full details of the deal that's been made or the promises that have been made as well, and hopefully we get a bit more detail on that. But yeah, all power to the Scotland women's national team, because they stood up and hopefully they've been heard.
I mean, it's sad that these things are still happening, but yeah, it's still sad that these things are happening. Warner, we'll come on to yourself, and then Eva, you can come in afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you see all over the women's game at the moment that there's so many protests and action being taken to kind of earn their rights. It's going on with the Lionesses. I think they paused over the World Cup. And obviously what we're seeing with the Spain squad at the moment just shows exactly how far the game does still have to come. And I think it's important we both talk about the progress that it has made, but also keep these movements in mind and keep them in focus as well, because we're seeing everyone praising the women's game. We're seeing everyone praising the progress of the play and how far the game has come and the crowds that it's now attracting. But if we can't reflect that in the treatment of the players and the pay of the players and the conditions for the players, then I think there's still so far to come, and we need to keep that in the spotlight just as much as we keep the kind of improvements in the spotlight, for sure.
The thing from this perspective, ladies, is that there's a lot of focus in the media at the moment, which I don't understand why it has that focus, but there seems to be a focus that is financial. When I read an article, I think it was in the Daily Mail last Thursday, when the tribunal was obviously concluded, that the financial side of it, there's not really a financial agreement as such for players to play for the national team. Correct me if I'm wrong in that regard. But as you say, Eva, it's for more than just financial qualification as to why the players have went and done this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're spot on. I think that was one of the first defences that the SFA kind of came out with, was that, you know, there's no financial kind of remuneration for you know, players getting called up to the national team or playing for the national team. And I think the reason that there was such a focus on the financial element, or what the media kind of latched onto, was because there was such a comparison with, you know, the US women's national team kind of, you know, their kind of action they were taking, and also in Canada. And then there was a direct, you know, they tried to compare it to what's happening in Wales as well, was they've obviously came to that agreement. So I think, like I say, every time Rachel Corsi's kind of interviewed on it, every time it gets brought up, she's incredibly clear that this is just, it's not just about that, whereas that might be an element if there was, you know, prize money or something at hand, but actually it's more about conditions and safety of our players. And I think she's been incredibly clear on that and stuck to those lines, and it's just a shame that the media in recent months haven't picked up on that as much as the, you know, the headline grabbing Scotland women's national team want more money.
It's a pity, because 6 years ago I remember Scotland were on the cusp of reaching, you know, 2017, on the cusp of winning it as well. And I remember Kim Whittle getting interviewed about it by the STV. And Kim Whittle, understandably, was going to stay quiet about it. But the main thing is, why is this still a discussion probably 5 or 6 years later.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's the thing. If you even spoke to some of the players before Kim Little, who were in the team, it's probably being discussed then too. And the fact is that they've hopefully found a solution. Now they've hopefully found they've probably had an agreement that there's going to be things put in place and there will be that level of equality. But again, have they actually seen any tangible differences yet? I don't know, because we've not seen any of the actual detail. So yeah, it's the fact that it's taken till 2023 for this to even get to that point where the players know that they can all stand by each other and actually hopefully get the support of the public, which I think for the most part they have, or it's taken huge nations like the in women's football, like the US, to actually take action for it, to show that other teams can potentially do similar in their own way.
Well, it's a sad indictment on women's football when in 2023 we're still reporting on stories such as this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for all the progress that has been made, it's still such a shame to see these stories almost dominating the news at the moment on women's football. You know, we could be getting excited about international matches. We could be having debates about whether the Nations League should exist, whether what it's going to provide, how it's what the teams are shaping up to be. Instead, you know, the headlines are, we've got this ongoing dispute with the SFA. We've got the Spanish national team plastering the kind of news headlines of any women's football site at the moment. And I think that is definitely a sad indictment of the game. But I do also think that it's great that those things are splashed over the headlines in some ways. I don't want to see those stories, but at the same time, they're at the top of the BBC Sport page, where 10 years ago, they'd probably be at the bottom, maybe not even on there at all. And it'd just be kind of women's football and dismissed as not relevant or not cared about enough by enough people. Whereas now that's front and centre, which is sad that that has to be front and centre. But it's also like there is progress and we need to keep doing these things. And it's sad they have to take this action, but we need to keep making sure that the pressure is kept on so that this can still be improving in 10 years' time.
I'll stick with yourself, Laura, because I kind of want to go on to a point that you raised there. Myself and Alison McConnell, we've had articles in the newspapers the last few days regarding, obviously, interviews we've done. Alison's with Rachel over the SFA dispute, which has finally been resolved, of course, and mine was with Amy Gallagher, as I've alluded to. And we all got a wee bit, basically, page, the fifth back page in the sports section of the newspaper, which tells us that the media in England, also the media in Scotland in particular, are still not fully on board with the women's game.
Yeah, I think there's still a long way to go, absolutely. And I think that's reflected in most sports websites. I mean, you look at a lot of sports websites and they have, you know, like football, cricket, golf sections across the top, and then they'll have an extra one for women's, as if it's like its own category. Whereas, like, why can't we just have them side by side as of equal importance in the football section? And there is a lot of pushback at the moment against the women's game. It's being included in FIFA Ultimate Team, and there's a lot of pushback on that. And there's so many issues that still need to be fought for, and we still like want to get you on the back page, obviously. So I think it is really important that we keep fighting for that and showing. It's sad that we have to show, and I don't think we should have to show, but let's keep pushing for that to happen and trying to keep the momentum going, because I think there is some momentum. And hopefully, if the Scottish national team do well, it's sad that they have to do well to be recognised, but if we can keep pushing these women's teams and giving them the investment to do well, then I think it will only get better.
Okay, Eva, on to you. I can't wait for FIFA.
Yeah, no, it's exciting, isn't it? Yeah, it's right. Like, I mean,
I'm saying FIFA.
Absolutely, it's historic. Like, I saw the kind of social media stuff that they've been doing on it, and the first Scottish women's club to be on it, which is super exciting. And it must be such an amazing feeling for people like Laura Montgomery, who has put her heart and soul into, you know, Glasgow City over however many years, to see them now in FIFA. As it is very exciting. But no, I'd love to see the full SWPL in the FIFA. I'll have to settle for the Scotland women's national team for now. But no, it's super exciting. It's brilliant. And hopefully they get like the actual faces for majority of them this time, and not just shove them on like a man's face, which was the case for quite a few of them in the last game.
Yeah. So who do Glasgow City play in FIFA? If you're the Glasgow City guy person, and you're going to play FIFA, who are you going to? Because there's a lot of women's teams on it.
I don't know what category they're put under, if they're getting put under the rest of the world one, because I don't think it's the full league that's been put in, but I think they've got, maybe it's under Champions League, because obviously they've made it through to the Champions League. Maybe they're being included in that, because I think in the previous FIFA game they included certain leagues. I think the WSL's in it, and I'm not sure. I think the German league's in it too, but I think Glasgow City are being added because they've managed to make it into the Champions League next stages.
Yeah, back on to go to Scotland on Friday. What's the approach? What should the mindset be? And can we win either?
Oh yeah, I think I mean, we often say like, oh, typical Scotland when we lose unexpectedly. But yeah, I think the other side of it, typical Scotland, we can surprise ourselves sometimes too. So I don't think we should rule ourselves out. I think that's just a bad thing to do if we go into a match saying that, oh, we're going to get beat, or we're going to get whatever. So no, I think like I said earlier, heads should be up. We have a solid team. For the majority of them, they've played together for quite a while. There's a good connections there. We can show up and give the best teams that are run for the money. There's no reason why we can't do that for England as well. But yeah, no, I think we should see this as a preview for the Hampden match off in December, and see how it goes. But no, it's sure to be an exciting game, especially I saw today that it's sold out. So that should be an incredible experience for both teams.
Or are you a big fan of this Nations League for the women's game?
I can't say I'm the biggest fan. I think there's a lot to be said for about how much. I don't think the Nations League as a concept is a bad thing, and I don't think it's a bad thing for the women's game. I think it's just the amount of football that women are having to play at the moment without a break, and the sheer number of injuries that we're seeing in the women's game at the moment. It almost feels a bit silly, we come off the back of a World Cup, to then go into another break before, play even starts, or only a few weeks after play starts in some cases. So I think there are pros and cons of it. I think it's a really good arena to test out playing against different sides, and I think that's something that's going to grow the women's game overall, and I think that's a really big positive of it. But yeah, I think there's definitely pros and cons, and we just have to be careful about managing players' playing time, and hopefully that will happen. But I think there is a tendency to, national team managers want to play their best players. It might not be the best for their domestic teams or for the player themselves. So I think as long as that balance is kept right, it can be a very good thing. But I'm not sure it always is.
See, if you're a half decent team, October, November, December, you're going to be playing Sunday, Wednesday, or Saturday, Wednesday, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Sorry.
On you go.
So I think there's a lot of game time coming up, and I think you've already seen from an England perspective, you're already seeing like Beth England getting injured and having to have an operation. Lots of women always been dropped from this camp from a minor muscle injury, whether that's just kind of a club tactic to keep her fresh, I'm not sure. But I think there's certainly like I think there's a thing in there's a women's game at the moment, isn't it, that the kind of major tournaments have not had a rest since COVID, and they won't probably get one till something like 2026. There's been no summers off, and obviously I think the Nations League is great for those teams that aren't qualifying for the bigger tournament. So I think this is probably quite an English bias perspective, and I do think it really does have its pros. But I do think like when you're playing in leagues, and you've got the Champions League, and Glasgow City will have the same kind of problem. It's a lot of game time, and this is just adding to that.
It's funny because we haven't done so well either, and then Cuthbert's hardly kicking a ball just now.
Yeah, no, it's I think for the most part, in terms of the Nations League stuff, Laura's spot on. I think we've seen a lot of players be burnt out, exhausted, like injury prone. And even though like you say, Scotland aren't aren't making it to the tournaments at present, it may actually not benefit us, but it's a good option for us to get out there and actually play some more international matches and see how the squad plays together. I think for the most part, seeing players get injured and sometimes it being through to, you know, just must. From the minor to the muscle strain to, you know, ACLs and stuff, and the fact that they're out for months at a time is not a good thing, and I think that needs to be obviously looked at. But yeah, I think they probably see it as, you know, bringing in the Women's Nations League as an equality factor. You know, the men have it, so the women should too. But yeah, I think it's obviously something that will need to be assessed. We're just at the very beginning of it and see how it goes. But yeah, no, we don't really know what's fully happening with Erin Cuthbert just now, though, do we? I don't really see, I've not even seen any of the injury. I know they're saying she's injured, but yeah.
It's actually funny you say that, because Alan Campbell, ex-journalist who's now retired, did put a thing up on Twitter saying, where's Erin Cuthbert? And then Jay Lewis replied back saying, she's injured. But then what Alan's point was is that I think the SFA usually say why a player's injured.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I was looking through a few. There was also Lana Cleland, who hasn't made it onto this call up. And I was trying to do a bit of research to see if she was injured as well, but we haven't heard anything. Heard anything from Lana Cleland or Erin Cuthbert officially. But yeah, that you're right. They absolutely usually tell us what's going on there. But they've been a bit more quiet on those two. But I'm sure we'll see with Erin anyway when the WSL starts up.
Yeah, Warren, you've referred to the injuries there for women's players, but it probably is good that we're in the same market as the men's game just now in terms of that quality, in terms of players getting more minutes, more competition, more matches essentially, but then there is that risk with injury.
Yeah, I think there is a balance to be struck, and I don't know if we're... I think you look at the comparison between the men's and the women's game, and the men's has had years and years of investment and learning about men's bodies, and all the research has been done on the men's game. And you look at the women's game and it's decades of research behind. And I think it's really sad for this generation almost that it's going to take a generation of research to perhaps understand why there are so many ACLs for women's players. And maybe the next generation can start putting in the S&C at a younger age that you might need, or those breaks, and understanding the research on women. And I think that's the difference between the men's and women's games. So yes, maybe on paper it's a quality to both have the Nations League, but we're seeing a more packed schedule. I think the way that women's tournaments are kind of landing on, they're usually on odd years, they were impacted a little bit more by COVID in the kind of bunch up for a start, and then just not understanding the kind of like, A, these players not having had the investment from a young age and so therefore being behind on the S&C. And secondly, just not having that research and understanding and just throwing in tournaments to keep them playing and to performative equality is potentially not the best things for their bodies.
Yep, absolutely. When you look at Glasgow City as a certain example, either for some of their players, they'll be playing internationals, domestic, Sky Sports Cup, Champions League. That's four competitions and potential awards and games in there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then especially people like, you know, Linda Motohalo, who's just off a World Cup run as well. It's a huge ask, and that's going to be replicated in you know, clubs around across Europe anyway. But it's a huge ask, and I think what's not scary, but what the unknown is that we don't know what's going to happen, because this is the kind of first time we've done it, first time we've seen it with these additional especially the Nations League and international matches on top of everything else. So no, it's like I say, I think it's important that it's continued to be assessed. I think some of the players will probably be a bit unsure about what's to come as well, because like a lot of them will already be exhausted, will be almost at that burnt out stage, and then to add more into the schedule without proper recovery is not a good place to be in, I don't think, especially like I say with the unknown of what's to come.
Warren, it's time you got your speech out. So just a host of questions on England. So where do you think the England squad is at just now in terms of mentality, mindset, confidence and momentum after what's happened at the World Cup?
I think it'll be a really interesting test of the kind of mettle of the squad and how they respond to that and how their bodies respond to that as much as anything. It will be, I think that's my biggest concern, is will it just look like a squad that's fatigued after a really long summer playing the maximum games at the World Cup and then obviously suffering that defeat to Spain, which was obviously very, very frustrating and sad for that team. So I guess it's that, can they bounce back? Do they have it? Do they have the kind of mentality to see them through this game? And I think they should. I believe that this team is definitely really strong mentally. And I think Serena Wiegmann is a really good coach for that kind of side of things. And I think it would potentially, if we lose, I think it would be the fatigue of the team. I also think they've potentially not, I still don't think throughout the World Cup it particularly clicked, maybe in the Australia game, in terms of goal scoring. So I'll be interested to see like how that goes from here.
Yeah, when you look at Friday in general context, what's England's kind of aspirations and expectations? Is it a statement win? Is it get a win? Or are you more concerned about performance?
I think it's always good to see a nice performance, to see a good performance. But I think for me, I'd be happy with just a win. I think when you put it in context of the kind of summer that England have had, I don't think a statement win would be something that you'd necessarily say, I absolutely expect that. I also think it would be a disservice to Scotland to say, I want a statement win here. I think on paper, England, you'd have down as the better team, and I definitely expect to win. But I think the Scotland are definitely a very strong prospect to face. And I think, yeah, I think to get a win would be what I would be most hoping for. I'm not overly concerned about performance. We're not in the lead up to a huge tournament at this stage. So I think a win would kind of suit me well. And I think it would suit the team well to kind of just get back on the 3 points track after that loss in the World Cup.
I was speaking to Jo Porter on Sunday, and she was saying about how England are serial winners now. Do you think they need to be winners again after failing at the final hurdle?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would definitely boost their confidence, re-put them on track, and just kind of assure them as a team that, yeah, we are winners. We're back to those winning ways, because there was that little wobble before the World Cup, and then they had a great run at the World Cup. And I'm sure with reflection, they've kind of, it's consolidated, you know what, we actually did do really well at that World Cup. We were facing a couple of major injuries, which they still are facing. Obviously, Beth Mead not making the squad and Leah Williamson still out. But I think to get a win on Friday will be a really good kind of just, you know, set the record straight. We are still winners. And also, I think it's a huge match in terms of rivalry. I think you can get a real buzz off an England-Scotland match if it's a sold out crowd as well, to go away winning from that. I think that's just as much of a buzz of like a match you could kind of replicate away from like a major tournament. So I think that would be really good if we could get the win for England, sure.
For England, it's a case of sell out. Are you happy the games in Sunderland, or you're not happy because you're based in London? It means you have to go to the other side of the country.
No, I'm happy. I think the football should be spread around, and obviously it makes it easier to have a bit of a travelling support for Scotland, which will create a better atmosphere. I'm living in London, but not from London, so I'm happy that there are games outside of London and outside of the South, which is good, and I think that should be encouraged.
Yeah, and I mean, women's football in Tyneside is very, very good. And as much as we'd like to see Wembley a home for England, it's good that we're seeing games elsewhere as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the only downside of it is the kind of like net transport links. Obviously, Wembley's pretty easy to get to from all over. But I think, yeah, let's take it back to Sunderland. I mean, look at how many of that England squad actually come from Sunderland. And I think it's like really impressive the kind of output that they had, especially in the kind of infancy of this generation of England players. You've got Jordan Nobbs, your Lucy Bronze, your Jill Scott, who's obviously retired now, and so many more that were produced in Sunderland. So I think it's really exciting to kind of re-energise the North East and get their name back on it, and hopefully produce more talent from that area and inspire some more people to take up football.
Yeah, and a massive occasion in terms of England probably do need that win. Do you think the perception on Sabrina will be different, perhaps, if England don't win a Friday or?
I think she's got enough of a legacy, especially at major tournaments, that the perception on her won't change. I think it would be take a string of results to maybe start to raise questions about her, and even then I'd have a tendency to blame the players on her track record. But I think a loss on Friday would obviously be very disappointing, but I don't think it would be a time to kind of unless it was like a shocking loss, I don't think it would be a time to necessarily raise questions about the squad. I think you'd have to take that in the context of tiredness, lethargy, whether that's playing a role, and look at the nature of the loss. But I don't think I'd start raising questions at that point.
Question for you both. What was the first ever international England was involved in?
England women?
The
Or
women?
England in general? England in general or England women?
The women.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
No, I don't know.
First international, Scotland 2, England 3, Greenock, Scotland, 18th November 1972.
There we go. Everybody knows the West of Scotland cricket ground one, but they don't know that one.
Yeah. Have you heard of the West of Scotland cricket club Warner?
No, I haven't.
No, it's basically that's where the first Scotland against England game got played.
Okay, right.
First ever international match in history.
Very impressive. I know that, yeah, I'm an Arsenal fan, so I know the first televised match was Arsenal versus Arsenal Reserve, but I need to scrub off my international matches.
Yeah. On to the SWPL1. Even some big results, I must say, on Sunday there. Rangers 12, Celtic 4.
Yes.
Glasgow City beat Dundee United by a considerable margin as well.
Yeah.
Not a good look, but at exactly the same time, it just shows where the top three are at just now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, we've spoken before on the podcast about that top three, and even just if you want to go to the top half of the league, how it ended last season. And we were expecting a lot of these, you know, big margin results. And I think we've started to see the top half of the league start to look exactly like it did at the end of last season. And, you know, people talk about I saw a bit of a commentary after the Montrose Rangers match, where Rangers won 12-0, and I think people were like, oh, well, that really shows the difference in investment, the difference in the clubs, but also I think when you look at the other end of the season, when we get to the end of it, a lot of this comes down to goal difference, so you can't really blame these big clubs for trying to take as many goals off them as possible, as much as it there is an inequality there. We spoke before about that big step up to the SWPL for clubs like Montrose is going to be a huge gap there. But yeah, we saw huge results. I think Hearts won 6-1 as well against Partick Thistle, didn't they?
Oh yeah, yeah, that was a big result, absolutely.
Yeah.
See how Montrose Rangers game. Very even game to probably 25 minutes. I was saying to people, 15th to 25th minute mark, Rangers were slowly coming into it, had more chances, were beginning to get a little bit more threatening towards goal. Megan Bell hit the crossbar. Hardy had a good shot saved by Warren Perry as well. But either side looked like really breaking the deadlock. Montrose had a great chance after 2 minutes, Rangers had a great chance after 6 or 7 minutes. But apart from that, there was nothing, and then Rangers scored the first goal on its cartons from that point onwards.
Yeah, I think it's not just even that, you know, Montrose's heads went down. I think it's just that, they go all out for 25 minutes, half an hour, and then it's just, you know, you cannot keep up with former SWPL winners, champions, even just their pace, their, you know, their stamina, all of that. You cannot compete with professional, full-time professional players. It's just not, there's an unequal, there's an unequalness there. There's a massive, massive gap. So even if Montrose are going out, full pelt for the first half an hour, even the full first half, like you say, as soon as the floodgates open, Rangers are going to, or whoever they may face in the weeks to come, Celtic, Glasgow City will probably see the same. I think it was Celtic took nine, was it nine Celtic took off them? Previously.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just doing a wee quiz. I'm just practicing for a wee quiz there. So that just goes to show you my unprofessionalism on the pod. But yeah, so I took 9 off them, obviously. But when you look at that two games in comparison, Celtic scored after 30 seconds or whatever, Harvey Reid just scored in the 29th and the 30th minute, which shows a tinge of improvement as such, but exactly the same time, 12 goals. I mean, we're beginning to see how good Rio Hardy is and what a signing she is for, and how big a player she is for Rangers.
Yeah, no, Rio Hardy is a solid player. She's settled right into the Rangers squad. I think she's just got Star Player of the Week of the SWPL as well. But also, you know, people like Libby Barnes, who literally just, you know, has just came up on loan over the last week. I think within 3 minutes she scored. So no, I think Rangers are really showing that they're a team to be. Who are right up for the fight to try and get that champions title back after the mayhem that was the last couple of weeks of the last season. But no, Rio Hardy is really showing herself. And I think what gets me is that the almost immediate partnership between herself and Kirsty Howitt, they seem like an almost automatic double act, which is really exciting to see.
Celtic had to show both sides of the game. They had to show resilience in the first half, got the goal for Coy Craig. In the second half, I missed the first half, by the way, but then I seen the second half, the Celtic were all over the second half.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think especially, I think the second half, they were, it's another case of, you know, get one in, the floodgates open. I don't know if Celtic will be too happy with just taking four off of Aberdeen, but yeah, it's another solid result by Celtic. Again, they've got their 3 points, so they'll be happy. And I think they've got a game in hand as well, don't they? It will be Glasgow City, so the next match that they play, so that'll be an exciting one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one because I interviewed Fran Alonso after the game and he didn't publicly admit he wasn't happy with just four, but I got the feeling that based on the body language, he was wanting more than four.
Yeah, I think it's the case of they know how the last season ended. It came down to goal difference. And I think the three top clubs, Glasgow City, Celtic and Rangers, will be trying to take as many off these clubs as possible, just in case it's as tight as it was last season. So teams like Aberdeen, Celtic, I think Celtic beat by quite a few more in the last time they played. I can't really remember the score. But yeah, they would have saw that as an opportunity to take quite a few off them. Like I say, they've got the 3 points. They'll be happy with that with a game in hand. But there's no doubt they know that the next challenge is Glasgow City, and that won't be as easy.
So I was speaking to Nicola after the game on Sunday. Nicola Docherty, 12 on Sunday, 8 against Dundee United and 4 against Motherwell. And that just shows, and Nicola admitted it herself, where the new last season it came down to goal differences to decide the league title. So Rangers have been going to the games now under Joe and wanted to create statements.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the thing is, like, I think these players as well realise that, you know, the gap between, you know, teams like themselves and those who are in the lower half of the league, and they probably understand the inequality in it, but ultimately they need to go out there, get the goals, because ultimately that's what the other teams are trying to do as well, because especially in Glasgow City and Celtic, because they know how close it was last time. They know it could potentially be the exact same this season, so they need to go out there and get as many, and not just stop. You know, it's maybe a cruel way to think about it, but that's Scottish football at present, and we can probably have a full conversation about how we make that a more balanced thing. But that's, you need to play the game as it is right now, and they know that it could come down to a few goals again, like it did last time.
Glasgow City, job done. 3 points home, could be happier.
Yeah, it was at 6-1 against Dundee United. Yeah, so again, they'll be happy with how many goals they got in. They'll be happy with the 3 points. I think they'll be probably the more confident now going into their next match against Celtic. I think City are looking absolutely solid again, as if they've got something to prove. I don't think they'll be wanting another situation where there's that tightness at the top. The last few weeks of the season, I think they'll be wanting to show that they're there to retain their championship.
The most fascinating result for me is that Hearts Partick game, because Hearts did ever so well to go 2-0 up last Wednesday night against Celtic. Ever so well, let's be honest. I know the game isn't settled in set pieces or whatever have you in opening 10 minutes, but Hearts did tremendously well both boxes in opening 10 minutes last week. Celtic find a way though, and that was ultimately what won them the game. However, I was shocked as to the scoreline based on how Hearts would have been mentally after that result. But what a statement that is from Eva Allwood's side.
No, absolutely. Hearts, I think you were kind of sending me messages throughout the Hearts-Celtic match, and I couldn't believe it when they went 2-0 up that early on. Obviously, yes, like you say, Celtic came back and saved it. But no, I think as well my kind of shock was on Partick Thistle's end. I think it might just be the opponents they've had in the first few weeks of the season, but they've had a really, from my view, a really solid start to their season. So the fact that on two occasions, and kind of looking at it two ways, one, that Hearts didn't put their head down after the Celtic result and still went in and with that kind of, positive mentality to win against Partick Thistle, but also the fact that Partick Thistle, allowed six goals in, after what I would say is quite a decent start to their season. But I think it does show that Hearts, even with the result against Celtic, are not to be messed with, not to be sniffed at, and I think they're in for a decent season again as well. Same with Hibs, to be honest.
Brian Graham. Excuse me, God. Brian Graham would have been frustrated with the outcome and the scoreline. But speaking from Brian's perspective, you probably wanted to address this one quickly and move on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Partick Thistle need to think about that match as almost a blip and get their heads up again and go again, because I think Partick Thistle over the last few seasons have been that kind of surprise entity, and just the way they made it into the SWPL, the way they've managed to stay up, the way that they managed to make it into the top half of the league last season. So yeah, no, I think they'll probably be looking at another middle table finish, hopefully in the top half of that. But yeah, Brian Graham just needs to get his team together and say, look, this is a blip. We're still early on in the season. Let's just go again.
I think Hibs have turned their season around in the space of a week. Victory over Motherwell, victory over Aberdeen, and yep, Edinburgh Derby win over Hearts.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we spoke a little bit about Hibs and what was kind of happening there and a few shock results. But no, hopefully it was just a 1-0 against Motherwell, wasn't it? But I think hopefully they've turned that around. I think they're in with another decent season similar to Hearts. Maybe they're one of the more surprise teams this season. But yeah, I think they're hopefully have turned it around, like you say.
I was surprised Hamilton drew with Spartans, especially having seen Hamilton against Aberdeen, and Spartans off the back of a terrific win against Partick Thistle, because Spartans was another one that I was looking at Spartans and going, that's an A+ if you take that Hamilton result out of the equation.
Yeah, no, I think that probably surprised Spartans as well, getting that result. Hamilton getting their first point of the season, and I think it was again neither Hamilton or Spartans are my expertise, but I think it was at Giard who managed to bring it back for Hamilton and get that draw. So yeah, no, absolutely, I think Spartans will be. I don't know if it was a case of Spartans underestimating Hamilton or giving a bit away, but no, good on Hamilton for getting their first point. I think it's a historic moment for them.
Okay, just to round things off, we've got a wee quiz. Nothing too major, nothing too hard. Just an appearance question. So we've got four questions, more four players to obviously look at. So who's got more appearances out of these two players? Rachel Corsi or Lucy Bronze?
I'll go Rachel.
Yeah, I'm going to go Lucy.
Eva, you're right. 140 to 112 for Rachel Corsi.
And you'd be close.
Greenwood against McCandy.
I'll go Greenwood for that one.
I'll go the other one for the fun.
Eva, you're 2-0 up.
I just think it because McCandy was out for a bit, wasn't she?
Yeah, 82 for Greenwood, McCandy's 73.
Well, that's even closer.
Yeah, no. This is a bit more out of range, this one. Stanway against Warder.
Stanley. She's quite young.
Yeah, I'll go Stanley.
Funnily enough, it's Hayley Water.
Is it? Okay. What's the difference?
Don't go for the one I go for.
100, well, this is based on Wikipedia, just to clarify. 103 to 57.
Yeah, Stanway's quite like younger than you think. It sounds like she's been around for a while, but I don't think she
And finally, Daly, yes, against Ebsley.
I'll go Daly on that. I think
Daly.
Yeah,
you're both right. Daly, 76 to 52.
Got one right. That's
it's always the case, these 50-50 ones, isn't it?
Yeah. So anything else just to add before we finish up?
No, just thanks very much for having us on, and it was good to discuss, and hopefully we'll be all pals come Friday's result for the rematch in December.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm unfortunately, I hate to admit it, I've got Shania Twain instead of going to the Scotland England match. So I'm double booked, but I've got a few pals going down to Sunderland, sitting in the England section though. So don't know how that'll go down.
Yeah, I can't make it either. It's a bit of a long trip and got uni, so sadly won't be there. But yeah, thanks very much for having me. I learned a lot about Scottish football, so it's been great.
Okay, thanks very much, guys.
Cheers.